It's such an honor to be here again. I appreciate these times of getting together with you, particularly on Easter, because it gives me an opportunity to find thoughts that I never had before. Maybe as a result of my talk, you'll have some thoughts you never had before. I don't think there's a chance that you won't. I heard some different things. I was looking for a particular joke and I couldn't find it. The internet really let me down this time. So what I got, though, was, there's this saying that ignorance is bliss. Why aren't there more happy people running around? And you get to thank Sally for that one. So, my upbringing about Jesus, which this day, this holiday called Easter is all about, my upbringing about Jesus was not something you would talk about. I was raised Jewish. I was raised in a kosher home. And Jesus was this guy that all those other people celebrated. They even had the chutzpah to call him God, which I have no idea if I'm going to offend anybody in this audience and this congregation, and I certainly hope that I do not. Oh, thank you. And I mean no disrespect, so I want you to know that going in. And I also want you to know I'm known around my circles as the rogue rabbi for a reason. Because I don't think things the way most people think about them. And I'm going to be willing to share with you most of it. Maybe all of it, we'll find out. Thank you. The title of the talk is The Midrash of Jesus. So I thought I would start by explaining what Midrash is, okay? Midrash is a term. If you look it up on the internet, it doesn't do it justice. The idea is we have a lot of words that come to us written, and we have a lot of blank space and what we're looking at when we read the written words. The question is, what is in the blank space? That's the Midrash. I'll give you an example that comes to me kind of like at this moment, because, as you know, we are celebrating Passover right now. It's an 8-day festival. How many were here yesterday at the Passover Seder? Okay. Good. So I don't know what Miriam and Simi used for their Haggadah, for their story that they told, but I'm willing to bet that one of the things they referenced was a particular piece of Midrash. You know where it says, or where you watched in the movie, about the Israelites crossing the Red Sea, and here it is, Moses took everybody out of Egypt. There we are at the Red Sea. What are we going to do? There's the Egyptians behind us. There's the sea in front of us. What, did you just take us out of slavery so we could die? By the way, he got to hear those words over and over and over again in the desert. But this isn't going to be a talk about Passover. I don't think. So in the Haggadah we read from Friday night, it says, you may remember Charlton Heston lifting his staff for the Red Sea to part. However, the Midrash contains a more meaningful version. It was Nachshon ben Aminadav who pushed to the front and then boldly began to walk into the water. It was not until the water was up over his neck that it parted. That's Midrash. And you know what I found fascinating when I was preparing for this talk? One of my friends pointed me to Luke chapter 2. And I start reading Luke chapter 2 in my own particular version. It's called the Jewish New Testament. I have no idea how it is similar or dissimilar from anything that you would read, but or that you wouldn't read, knowing who you might be. That there in the list of Jesus's ancestors was Nachshon ben Aminadab. It's like, oh my gosh, there really was a Jesus. Of course there was a Jesus. Unless there wasn't. Of course there was a Moses, unless there wasn't. So I thought I would take a moment and talk about myth. I don't know about you, but when I went to school as a youngster, when we learned about myth and mythology, generally we learned about the Greek or the Roman gods that was this mythology. And we were taught that mythology kind of meant that which isn't true. That's not what mythology means, okay? Mythology is the group dream that we're all living under. And the question is, what group dream do we look at? It doesn't matter if you believe in Jesus or you don't. It doesn't matter if you believe in God or you don't. It doesn't matter if there was a crucifixion or there wasn't. It doesn't matter if Moses took the Israelites out of slavery or he didn't. It's the myth we're all living under. And if you're a Buddhist, you're living under the Siddhartha myth, or Hindu, and Ganesh, and the various gods and goddesses in the Hindu tradition. We're all living in a myth, and the key is to take a look at that myth and see what it means to you. How does it make you who you are? How does it make you better? How does it make you not as better as you might want to be? So we take a look today at a bit of this myth. And when I first learned about myth in this way, it was from Joseph Campbell. And he was talking about these myths. And he said what he loves about the Hindu religion is it admits right from the start that this is our myth. So I invite us at this moment in time to realize that these myths make a difference, and these myths are our myths, even if we don't believe a word of it. It still affects us. You know, I particularly wanted to address my favorite of Jesus' teachings, the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. What does that even mean? Well, today, while we have a lot of fake news and alternative facts, maybe the truth will set you free. But the question is, what is the truth? I have a nephew that lets me know that MSNBC and Rachel Maddow are as much fake news as what I don't believe coming out of the mouths of the people on Fox News. So the truth will set us free. But what is the truth? I went and researched this also on the internet. Do Unitarians believe in reincarnation? And what I discovered is the answer is yes and no. How many Unitarians are in this room? Let's say 60. Joy will let me know, but there's more than 18. I didn't raise my hand as part of the community here. But I'm guessing that half of you, maybe more than half of you, don't believe in reincarnation. And I'm guessing that half of you, maybe more than half of you, believe in reincarnation. So you do the math. How many are willing to raise their hand and say they believe in reincarnation? There's a couple, maybe three, four. Okay. Well, then I'm going to invite the rest of you to pretend. Because I believe in reincarnation. Not only do I believe in reincarnation, I believe that one of my prior lives was with Jesus. I was here 2,000 years ago. My name was not Kalish. I wasn't a rabbi either. I believe I was his best friend. So it pains me deeply when I hear people use Jesus' name in a way that supports something that Jesus would find abhorrent, like murder or killing, or saying that somebody was unworthy of love. That was not my best friend, Jesus. And so I asked one of my minister friends, she teaches in Ferndale, do you think it would be okay for my annual Easter talk to speak about me being Jesus' best friend? Of course, at the time, I didn't know I was his best friend. But that I, about this life that I had and what I knew about him as a result of this life? And she said, sure. So I took that as permission. So that's why you get this talk. You know that one of Jesus's focuses was on health. And so I recently learned something, an interesting research about health. And that research is, they did a study and looked at the fact that, you know, Japanese don't eat that much meat, that much red meat. And they have far fewer heart attacks than the British or the Americans. Well, on the other hand, the French eat a lot of fat. A lot more fat than the Americans or the British. And they have a lot fewer heart attacks than the American or the British. And you know, the Italians drink way more red wine than the British or the Americans. And they, too, have far fewer heart attacks than the American or the British. So the research is clear. Eat or drink whatever you want. Just stop speaking English because that's what kills you. So the way I got to the pieces of this talk, the coming pieces of this talk, is I sat down and I had a conversation with Jesus. And I said, tell me what the truth is. Tell me what was going on. And that's when he let me know that I was his best friend in that situation. And the way we became friends, the way we met, was, if you remember, those of you that were there, there were three pilgrim festivals. Every Passover, every Shavuot, which is the celebration of receiving the word of God from Sinai, and Sukkot, known as the Festival of Booths, but it's the Harvest Festival. Those three festivals, we all made pilgrimage to the temple in Jerusalem. And when we got to the temple, we would have a chance to see the priests of the day. They weren't called rabbis, they were called priests. And bar mitzvah back then didn't happen the same way that it happens now. Bar mitzvah back then was during one of these pilgrim festivals, the children that were now 13 would stand up and support the service that the priest was creating. And that service would be enhanced by the new adults in the community. And nobody knew what the boys were going to say. Nobody knew what they were going to, they weren't necessarily going to talk about a Torah portion, because that split up of the portion of the Torah into multiple parts for each week didn't happen until later. So Jesus met me at my bar mitzvah when I was there for that moment of coming up to the high priest and offering my thoughts, not Jesus's thoughts, not anybody else's thoughts, not my parents' thoughts, not my teacher's thoughts, but my thoughts. And I expressed things like, the truth will set you free. I expressed things like the importance of loving your neighbor. And Jesus loved what I said and came up to me afterwards. We didn't have any fancy celebrations. He just came up to me afterwards and let me know that he was interested in what I had to say and what I was thinking. And so we started talking. And oh, by the way, I introduced him to my best friend. She did not get to become bar mitzvah because she was a girl. But the three of us started to hang out together. Jesus and her and me. The three of us hung out together and we talked about everything. One night, we were camping out underneath the stars. This is after Jesus' bar mitzvah. Jesus' bar mitzvah is what I read about in Luke chapter 2. Wasn't quite the way that happened. Jesus had arranged with his family to stay behind, to hang out with the priests and continue studying with them and sharing ideas because they liked what Jesus had to say. So it was a couple years after that where Jesus and I were camping out in the wilderness, out under the stars, and we're looking up at the stars and we're talking about, do you see that star up there? I wonder what it's like up there. Do you think we could see all of this down here if we're up there? We can see up there from here. I mean, we were asking and answering the deepest questions of the day. We didn't know anybody else that was doing that, so that's why the three of us loved hanging out together. So shortly thereafter, I think it was all three of us went to the Essenes. That was another Jewish sect. There were three main Jewish sects at that time. There was the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes. And by the way, the story in what is called the Christian Bible about the Pharisees, that's not how it went. The Pharisees and Jesus cared about each other. They respected each other. They valued each other's opinions. Hillel was a Pharisee. Hillel's, I want to say, alter ego, Shammai, was a Pharisee. All of us had some concerns about the Sadducees, but we always have to have somebody that we think is other, that's different from us, so we can hold them up as a mirror and look at what we're not including in ourselves yet. Because Jesus was all about teaching us to include all of us, even the Sadducees that he had difficulty with. Anyhow, while we were living with the Essenes, we struggled a bit because they were very, very strict. They were even more strict than the Sadducees. And this really didn't fit our style of loving everybody. And we particularly didn't like how they treated the women who were married because they saw them definitely as less than. We didn't go along with that. So I left first. I couldn't take it any longer. And of course, my friend came with me. And so we went elsewhere. It took Jesus about another 9 months, pardon the expression, to decide that this was also too much for him. And so he left the Essenes. And we found each other. I have to be careful not to get my stories mixed up in my head. We found each other and decided what we wanted to learn about was something we had heard about before, Buddhism. It's like there was something very special about Buddhism, and we wanted to learn more about it. And so we wandered off to a place, probably India, probably Pakistan, or one of those locations over there, to live with the Buddhists and really understand what they believed. So, at a certain point in time, Jesus realized from his own connection to the divine, he realized that the Jews were near time going to lose the freedom that they had from the Romans to worship as they chose. The Jews were very well treated under the Roman rulers, because somebody had done a treaty, only one that was going to be honored until it stopped being honored, which was about to happen. And Jesus became aware of this, so he wanted to go back to the Jews and help them realize this. Well, the Sadducees did not like what Jesus was speaking about. And the one who really didn't like what Jesus was speaking about was Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate wanted Jesus gone. So we all devised a plot. We devised this plot where Judas, we devised the plot, where Judas would point out who Jesus was so that the Romans could think they were killing Jesus. Now, when Jesus was off in India, he learned how to affect his body. He learned how to separate from his body. He's the one that didn't eat any of these things or speak English. So The plot was they would kill him. They would think they would kill him. And Jesus would appear to die. And then several of them would go back, take him from wherever he was killed, cross, or I think of it more of as a post. And so took him from that post and put him into the grave. And I was one of the ones who helped prepare him to be in the grave and be able to breathe and have enough air so that he could leave the grave. Now, Passover, as I said, was 8 days long as a pilgrimage festival. It wasn't 3 days later. It was more than 3 days later when what we did was we made room for Jesus to come out of the grave, and we went and celebrated, but we celebrated by leaving quickly, like getting out of Dodge fast as we could. And we actually went west, further into Egypt, past Egypt, and had a good time from there on. Don't know when he died or when I died or what, but I just thought I'd share with you that midrash. And the question is, the most important things that he wanted me to tell you. So now I have to find out where they are in my notes. I know they're bullet points, so I can find them that way. Here's the three most important teachings. The truth will set you free. All beliefs, I'll repeat that, all beliefs come from a particular perspective. In order for you to know your belief, you have to know your perspective. Number three, love is the way to God. So I want to close with, like I said, my favorite of these, the truth will set you free. The question is, what truth? Do you know that you choose your truth every single day? So if you don't like the truth you're believing today, change it. Know that it served you till this moment. Know that you've done perfectly the best you could, given the truths that you were given before, and you have the opportunity to change those truths now. And so it is.